Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
What's up? Welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Aaron Guyette. Aaron wears many different hats. He's a battle ropes instructor. He owns a company called Leader of Leaders, and he is part of an organization called the Special Forces Experience. I hope I'm getting that correct. The Special Forces Experience. We spend most of this show talking about leadership. So whether you want to be a better coach, a better gym owner, a better teacher or parent, or any form of leader, he gives a ton of different kind of mindset shifts and tactics to becoming a better leader. We also talk a lot about vision, and whether you are a leader or not, creating a vision for yourself or for the people that you're teaching is incredibly important. And we talk about his process that he calls vision, intention, and means, them. It's a really, really powerful process for getting clear about what you want to what you want out of life and how to get there. I really, really enjoyed this show, and I hope you do too. Before we get started, if you've got time, head to iTunes, leave me a quick review, hit the subscribe button, and if you love the show, share it. Thank you. Aaron, what's up, brother? How are you?
I am awesome. How are you doing, Michael?
Doing great, man. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been looking forward to this.
Absolutely. Me too.
So you teach leaders how to be better leaders. Where did this inspiration come for you?
Yeah. And it's not even so much how to be better leaders, but you know, when a leader changes, everything changes, right? When a leader improves, everybody improves. But I think the issue is most people's idea or definition of leadership. Leadership tends to be this idea of garnering followership or building up, you know, a team and having a team kind of follow you, or even, you know, delegating out and having people do your bidding. I think that's a good definition, but it's not a complete definition, and it doesn't dive, I don't think, deep enough. For me, being a good leader is all of those things, but being a great leader is developing other leaders and developing them even to the point knowing that they may and should, if you're doing a good job, pass you up at some point. And that's hard for the ego to deal with. Mm-hmm. So it tends to be hard for leaders to deal with. But then I think once we catch that deeper meaning of leadership, everything changes. Everything from business to family to community to fitness to, you know, you name it, the whole game changes, because now it's not about the self-serving leadership. It's about this selfless, even maybe sacrificial, even, you know, servant leader that's, you know, laying down his, whether it's knowledge, philosophy, or life, so that he's elevating everybody or she's elevating everybody around them.
So you've got multiple businesses where you're teaching this and, you know, building leaders. You're obviously super passionate about it. Where did this like fire start to get built in you? And like, why does this matter to you so much?
Yeah, there, you know, there's the nature versus nurture, I think, argument about leadership, like, oh, it came from, it's a genetic thing, it's built in, it's the wiring of this person's brain. I think that there is a little bit of that. A lot of it happened with kind of dealing with insecurity and thinking that, you know, if I just learn more, if I just do more, if I just have more, if I become more, then, you know, everything is going to get better. And at some point you'll hit a wall and it's like, well, that's not necessarily the case. And it was, for me, there was a couple of traumatic moments, like when I was a kid, there was some sexual abuse that did a ton of, that worked me in terms of like ego and pride and then wearing this mask and whatever. Then there was enter the Marine Corps, training for, you know, years, and then actually being able to use that training in a combat environment and really thinking that I was going to die. I just knew that I was going to die, even though obviously I'm standing right here and I didn't die. And that really changed kind of the way that I viewed the world and the way that I viewed everything else. And then getting into corporate America, you know, I got into the medical, it was actually like a cancer lab type setting, but very, very corporate-y, you know, with standard operating procedures and, you know, this massive hierarchy and all these, you know, different modalities in order to get just one little thing done, all this bureaucracy or whatever. And then also getting into the fitness industry and kind of mainstream with, you know, I've started training at LA Fitness and realizing that, you know, with all of these systems, there wasn't, it didn't seem like there was a win-win-win that was being propagated, that was being taught. It was more about this zero-sum game. And I think our culture, I think our society tends to think of winning as this zero-sum game where, like, in order for me to win, you have to lose. And that goes all the way even into, you know, politics and specifically leadership, you know, even with celebrities and whatnot. If leaders are thinking that, then they definitely don't have your best interest in mind if they're leading you. And, so I just thought about, okay, what are some ways that we can change the game on this? How can we shift this? How can we flip this idea onto its ear and really make an impact and really make changes? And, you know, and so I did the very conventional, traditional get a bachelor's degree, got a master's degree, you know, in organizational leadership, got a bachelor's degree in business management. But then also boots on the ground, you know, built a gym, you know, started it in 2005, sold it just last year in 2017, and really tried to learn with boots on the ground, got hyper involved in church, still continue to work in the Marine Corps Reserves, teaching, basically combat skills to these young and old Marines that need a refresher training before they go to combat, and started, you know, slowly implementing it. So it was this very slow, steady growth, but there was a lot of like kind of low moments that helped change my perspective, but then also some really high moments where it was like, oh, wow. I think that's a better win. And at the end of the day, what I realized is, you know, humans are way too intelligent to have this zero sum game ideology, this zero sum game theory. It's not profiting us in the long haul. It does, you know, it might fill my pocket with cash, which is great. But then, you know, what about all the at this, you know, at the cost of you, at the cost of this team, at the cost of this community? And I don't think that that's right. And so I realized, like, I think we're all too smart to think in a zero sum game mentality. I think that there can be a win-win-win. And for me, it came in the form of leaders of leaders, leaders developing other leaders, you know, and basically you're developing people in their sphere of influence,
right,
to influence that sphere better, more proficiently, make a deeper impact, you know, make impacts that matter for the long haul. So yeah, there's kind of a lot that went into it, but that slow, steady realization of, you know, it doesn't have to be a zero sum mentality anymore.
Right. Yeah. If a leader is just leading a bunch of followers, then the impact ends at the sum of those parts, right?
Yep.
Whereas if the leader builds other leaders, there's no, like, it's an exponential growth. Then they go and impact all of the people that they're going to impact. And if they have that same mentality, then they're also building other leaders. And it's just an exponential way to
Absolutely.
Go about it. So how did, I know that you kind of grew up being told that you were a great leader, and then it was kind of constraining to you. And I could really, it really resonated with me when I heard that about you on a podcast. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you kind of dealt with that?
Yeah. Well, so yeah, being told, I think, you know, we tend to try to fit molds of people's perceptions of us. We try to fill expectation voids. And sometimes that works, you know, sometimes that's positive, sometimes that profits, you know, from a value add standpoint or whatnot. But then other times, you know, it can actually hurt us. You know, we can essentially wear masks or actually have this growing insecurity because we're not actually being who, you know, we are at our center. The intrinsic us isn't the me that's being portrayed. It's the me that I think that you want me to be. And you know, at the end of the day, that's not going to work. At the end of the day, we're setting up ourselves for this massive failure. So I think part of it was good because I was like, okay, you know, I had this constant idea of myself as being lesser than, and then, well, people are telling me that I'm a leader. So I better figure out how to be a leader, even though I don't think that I'm a leader. And so, you know, some of that happened in the Marine Corps, some of that happened in my childhood. But then I realized, okay, I did learn some things in that process, but really that set me up for ultimate failure when I, you know, if I ever made, you know, mistakes or whatever, because, well, now I'm not the expectation of who, you know, they told me that I was because, oh, I made this mistake. So I must be a fraud and I better quit. And it was at those moments where I was like, no, I actually need to reset some of my beliefs. I need to reset some of my values because clearly those beliefs, those values are not serving me. And if they're not serving me, then they're also not going to be able to serve the greater good for anybody else. I'm not going to be able to be the person who I truly am with all of my flaws, with all of my weaknesses, with all of my mistakes, but also with all of my strengths, with all of the accolades or the things that I can add into the value that I can add into people's lives. So for me, it created this almost like earthquake, right? Like there was this gap underneath the earth, then a shift happened, then boom, the level sort of fell. But once that level fell, then it actually created this incredible chance to build a true foundation, one without a gap underneath it, one that wasn't going to create this massive, you know, tremor or shift in my life. But it took a massive tremor, a massive shift in my life in order to start building then from that foundation. And now I can give true value. I can give who I am. I can be who I am and be okay with my faults, be okay with my failures, and truly serve and deliver true value to whoever it is that, you know, I get put in front of.
And there's a lot more solidarity in that approach, right? That's built on a solid foundation, whereas how you grew up was more built on maybe ego. And I can so relate to that, man. You know, I grew up, school came really easy, and I grew up in a small town, so I excelled at like every sport, above average at every sport. I was told I was a leader. And so when I got out into the big world and there are all these talented people around me, I'm just a fucking average Joe.
Yeah.
You know, I'm completely average. But yeah, I didn't know how to work hard for anything because everything always came easy.
Yeah.
And so it just knocked my ego down to size over and over and over in every single area of my life. And through those experiences, there's a lot of pain in realizing that. And yet I've been able to become so much stronger and so much of a better person, so much more successful than I ever would have been if I would have just tried to maintain that feeling of, you know, I'm above average or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, I mean, you can create a metaphor that's like lifting. It would be like, you know, you're doing quarter squats and you're like, so I'm moving this massive weight, but they're only quarter squats. And then you get out in the real world and it's like, no, this is a real squat. This is full depth. And you're like, oh shit. You know, like, oh, I got to reset. Everything changes now.
Take off these three plates then.
I'm like, I can't move this like I thought I could. All right. And, but that's, I don't know. I think those moments that trauma or whatever, and maybe it's micro trauma, but it's still trauma. Those traumatic moments are necessary for true growth and true development. And not that you didn't grow and develop and succeed in the small setting that you were in, but now you're in this really much greater setting, this environment. The environment changed, so now, man, you're right. Like, okay, I'm average, or I found out like, man, in some things I'm below average. Like, I better I better get my shit together. I better figure this thing out. Otherwise I'm going to be left behind, you know?
Right. So you also told me before that you weren't always a humble person or leader, but now you are, and you're also really big on accountability. And I think those two kind of go hand in hand. What kind of changed how you view accountability and even talk about how, like, the importance of accountability and leadership a little bit?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, you know, if I'm, most of the time, leaders sort of set this, these value systems and, you know, whether they do it with articulate means and they, you know, post it up on the walls and write standard operating procedures behind it and, you know, set up all these structures that have it filled with it or not, we still do. We have, you know, sort of our token sayings or our mottos or, you know, the deliverables that we talk about delivering, and even the deliverables that we continuously deliver on. But the thing is, like, you know, we're still failed, flawed, you know, people. We're not going to be perfect, and we're not going to be able to do that every time unless we can set up some accountability measures. So, like, for instance, if you set that new level of depth of squat or whatever, it would be so easy as you start adding, you know, more weight or adding more value to your leadership to then keep readjusting that range of motion or readjusting how you're delivering it and make it easier for you to deliver, you know, to not get up early in the morning or to not, you know, exercise every day or to not write every day or to not read every day or learn every day or, you know, hold yourself to a higher moral standard every day. So when it comes to, you know, whether it's lying, stealing, and, you know, because all of these things can creep in and they can start small, but then turn into something way bigger. So if you set some accountability, it's like, hey, I give you the right at any moment to call me out on my stuff, to call me out on the values that I know that I believe in, so that I maintain that, so that I adhere to that. And so some of it is empowering others to hold you accountable, and some of it is just setting up. You can set up environments, you can set up protocol, you can set up situations where you're going to hold yourself, like, setting up that situation holds you to this higher value. You know, one of those for me, like, I have a wife and I believe in, you know, a monogamous relationship with my wife. So, like, I set up parameters if and when I go and meet with other females, that there's other people around. And, you know, part of that is to protect me, but mainly it's to protect the other female and to protect my wife. Like, it has even less to do with me, but it's like, if this is the moral standard that I believe in and I'm adhering to, like, how am I going to set the situations up so I hold to that standard? And I think that that's massively important. And we see it all the time with, like, celebrities and politicians and whatever. It's in the news, you know, all the time. It's like, well, this stuff could be easily solved if we just set up a couple of accountability, and you can personalize it. You can set it up to whatever your beliefs are. I'm not saying that you need to believe in what I believe in, but whatever you believe in, if you're not holding yourself accountable to that, then, you know, I don't want to buy what you're selling me then. I don't want to buy that belief. It's not viable at this point.
Right. Yeah. A way that we do it in our business is we use something called flash reports, where anyone reporting to the, so every person reporting to the person above them sends a flash report to their, you know, quote unquote superior, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me as a leader, for a long time, I had no one that I was reporting to. And so I wasn't being held accountable. And so then I started sharing a flash report with all of them as well, so that they know what I'm working on. They know what I worked on, if I accomplished what I said I would, and what I'm going to accomplish in the next week. And that simple act raises me to another standard, to another level of accountability and performance. And it's been incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I have a couple of weekly meetings. And when I owned Innovative Results, the gym that I owned for 12 years, we would do a daily scrum, we called it. And it's from the book Scrum, or a daily stand up from the book Scrum. And everybody looked each other in the eye and said, hey, this is what I'm working toward. This is what I've done yesterday. This is what I'm going to do today. It would take, you know, maybe 30 seconds at the, you know, at the very most, it would take a minute for each person to say it. And, you know, in that team of individuals, whether it was the team of trainers or the team of leaders or the team of admin or, you know, whatever it was in that team, we're all on pretty much level ground. And even if you're like the lead or the leader, and then, you know, there's a subordinate there or whatever, you're looking at the subordinate even saying like, this is what I'm delivering on today. This is what I did yesterday. And this is the goal that it's moving us toward, us together and me, you know, the individual. And so, yeah, I think that that is an incredible way of ensuring, you know, that you're holding yourself to the standard that you are saying that you're going to hold everybody else to.
Right. Can you talk about your vision, intention, and means philosophy? Mm.
Yeah. So that's so philosopher Dallas Willard, that's like kind of his deal. But I took that and, I had to fill in some, you know, kind of articulate it a little bit. But essentially, so vision, you know, we talked about belief and we talked about values, you know, and they kind of go hand in hand. This is truly what I believe either about myself or about this business or about this project that we're doing or this task or this community, whatever it is. And then this is where not only the organizational purpose, but also my personal purpose align. And then this is the vision that we see or I see coming from that thing, right? So that's the vision part, right? It's your beliefs, your purpose, your values, and then the kind of the larger vision, what this is going to turn into.
Where we're going.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you cast that vision, and you know, I filled in the pieces a little bit and put some extra stuff so you can really kind of create a robust vision. And the thing is, like, people think, oh, you cast a vision once and then you walk away and then it's going to happen. Or the, you know, the new age thought is like, oh, if I believe it, then I'll achieve it. And it's like, there's a little bit more to it than just believing, right? And so a lot of that is like, I need to be very articulate. I want to be as detailed as possible. And every day, if I can add more detail to that vision, if I can, you know, put some more colors in there, put some more detail in there to really, really understand what that vision means to me, is just as important as also, you know, articulating it and detailing out for your team or for your organization or for your community. And then from that, now you can get specific about the intentions. Okay. So here's what I intend to do. Here are my intentions. Then here's how, you know, it needs to be prioritized. Here's how relationship and communication is going to play into that. Here's how I need to schedule this. Then if it's prioritized, then here's how I need to schedule these actions. And I need to make sure that I don't do these things, because these things aren't going to work toward that vision. This is the system, right? This is how we're going to delegate this. This is how we're going to scale this. And then it's time to actually start walking it out. And so then that's the means. Like, okay, cool. You've got a great vision. Cool. You got good intentions. But if you don't act on those, if you don't actually, you know, put the rubber to the road, you ain't going anywhere. And so then you've clarified it. Now all you got to do is walk it out. And the better we get at that VIM model, that vision, intention, means model, the better products that we're going to see, the better communities that we're going to see, the better leadership development we're going to create. And that's that, to me, like, that is the cornerstone, that the foundation of this whole Leaders of Leaders built on. If you can't do those three things well, then you're going to have a really tough time doing anything well. And granted, you might call it some other words or terms or something like that, but we're all doing that on some level.
Yeah, that's an incredible algorithm for life, man. And I love this equation that I just picked up, that is manifestation equals intention plus attention. You know, by creating that vision and putting all of your attention on where you're going, like what your intentions are on a day-to-day basis, we can create any reality that we want. We can reach any vision that we want. And I really love the little nuance in there about making the vision as detailed and high definition as possible, because the clearer it becomes, the more obvious it becomes what our intentions, like what our day-to-day actions need to be. And I've known the power of this for a while, but it's one thing to understand it and another to practice it on a regular basis. And yeah. I've been journaling more than ever in my life and revisiting my intentions. And it's crazy how fast things happen when we're putting our focus on things.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's night and day. Yeah. So in the Marine Corps, they with this whole leadership thing, they have a saying, inspect what you expect. And it's sort of the same thing. It's like, hey, if I've said, hey, this is what we're going to do, and then I walk away and I never come back to that thing. Well, if it turns out wrong, like, that's your fault. That's not their fault. Like, you need to make sure that what you're saying is what they're hearing and is what they're doing. Not just, you know, hey, say it back to me, but say it back to me. But then, hey, I'm going to come and I'm not going to demean you. I'm not going to belittle you when I inspect it. If you get it wrong, it's a great opportunity for me to then continue to clarify, you know, what's going on. And I like that little saying too. When you get down to brass tacks and you start actually performing actions, it's like, hey, you better inspect what you expect, especially if you're trying to create something that's greater than yourself. Like, if you're just creating something yourself, well then, yeah, you know, journaling on your own and kind of, you know, clarifying it on your own is great. But if you're trying to create something greater, then journaling on your own and then making sure that, like, all of that stuff that you're clarifying to yourself, you're going to clarify to the others. And like you said, you start putting that into action, not only personally, but with your team. Yeah. The acceleration at which things happen and the quality. So not just quantitatively, like time, money, you know, all that stuff, but the qualitative metrics, the quality at which things are being done. It's night and day. It's night and stinking day.
So when people are creating a vision for themselves, how do you differentiate between so many different opportunities, and how do you really know what it is that you want rather than something you just think is sexy and, you know, maybe society deems as being successful?
Yeah, that's a awesome question. And I think that's a question that needs to get asked more often by more people. What are your beliefs? What are your values? What is your purpose? Is this thing contributing to your purpose, or is it contributing to your ego? You know, just because you got now more followers, or just because you just made more money, or just because you did something else, you collected another accolade, you collected another certification, you collected another something, trophy, whatever, doesn't mean that this is going to pay into your purpose, your beliefs, or your values. So you're all, like, to me, then you're always going back. And that helps. I mean, the vision really helps with that, because, you know, if I've got a blank canvas and I just kind of draw stick figures, like, kind of, you know, there's a lot of things that can be those stick figures or whatever. But when I get in and start putting all sorts of color in there and turn that whole thing into a Monet or a Manet or, you know, either one of those Renaissance artists, whatever, right? And really, then it's like, oh, that's not just stick figures. Those are, you know, people at a park, and they're playing. And clearly, I'm, you know, just using that metaphor. Maybe I don't want to take it too far, but that's why you detail out that vision. That's why you clarify, what are my beliefs? You know, otherwise you're going to be at the whim of society, or you're going to be at the whim of your ego. And which one is worse? I don't know. Like, they can both be pretty bad. And not to say, you know, ego doesn't help, and not to say society doesn't help with those things. And probably your ego and society are going to play a role in setting up that purpose, setting up those beliefs. But the thing is, the more you clarify that, the more you realize, hey, this isn't serving, this is cool, or I'm going to make a lot of money here, or I'm going to help a lot of people here, but this is so off of what my, you know, my direction, what my heading is, that this isn't going to serve the larger purpose. This isn't going to serve the larger purpose of me, which, you know, also isn't going to serve the larger purpose of what we're trying to do here. So let's not get caught up with that. Although it's cool. And although, like, sometimes it's hard because it's like, man, this is low hanging fruit. Like, this is too easy. All I got to do is reach out and grab it. And then we got like all this stuff. But it's like, yeah, that doesn't align with your beliefs. That doesn't align with your values or your purpose. So in the end, you know, you're going to grab that fruit and it's going to taste bitter. It's going to be nasty. It's not going to, because it's not contributing to that greater good that you've set in your vision.
I think it's also useful to when setting a vision or even goals, to not make it in relation to what you're already doing, to kind of set aside everything that you're doing and ask yourself, what would I do if I had it my way? Like, what, how would I set my life up, my relationships up, my career up exactly how I wanted, and make that make that the star that we're really shooting for, rather than how could I, you know, marginally improve what I'm already doing, right? And,
yeah.
and compare success based on what we're already doing.
Yeah. There's a really cool, I call it positive neuroplasticity training that I will do once a week. And there's a bunch that I do like every day, you know, three good things that happened in the last 24 hours. That's a really good one, because our brains, the way our neurology is set, like we will always focus on the negative. We'll always create a negative narrative much faster, much easier than we will a positive one. So we've actually got to do work, you know, to change the way our brain processes stuff and creates these, you know, inner narratives or future narratives and stuff like that. So one that I love doing is, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years, I'll pick a time that's still achievable. And it's like, and I call it best possible future. So what if everything went perfectly right? You know, everything that I want, everything that I'm desiring, everything that I'm trying to accomplish. So not only current goals, but more importantly, like you said, I'm setting it up. Hey, this is not bound by the goals that I've already previously achieved or set. This is kind of boundless. Like, in 1 year, if everything were to go exactly as I envision and want and desire, what would that look like? And the crazy part is, the more I started doing this, the more, now I look back, I've been doing it now for 2 years. Now I look back and I'm like, man, I am living that life that I was articulating, that at the beginning, I'm not gonna lie, like, I thought it was impossible.
Right.
I was like, I'm just gonna write this and, you know, kind of humor this process, because I do need to change, you know, create like a little bit more of a positive neuroplasticity setting in my brain. So I'm gonna do the work to do that. But what ended up happening is, like, I'm living that life. And granted, bad things still have happened, and, you know, things that I wouldn't have wanted or whatever, but largely, like, 90, not just like 80% solution, like 90, 95% of what I was writing about is what I'm living now. Like, to me, that's insane. But it was that was the detailing out that, you know, really getting into the nitty gritty and setting that vision.
Right. Rather than what most of us do, which is just kind of, we're at a spot in life and we're just trying to move a little bit forward, not with much direction. We just, like, we kind of have an idea of a bunch of directions we're going, and we're just trying to get a little bit better, rather than saying, what's the ultimate, like, what's my Everest mission? Where do I really want to go? And then, like, getting clear about how to make that happen.
Yeah.
Human beings have the unique ability to create a vision from nothing and just go and make it happen.
Yeah. No, it's insane. Our ability to create is amazing. There was a guy, Craig Rochelle, he has a leadership podcast, and I was listening to it, and he goes, you want to change? You want to change the way you're going to do something, or you want to really make an impact? He goes, whatever you put down on paper, he goes, add a zero to it.
Wow.
It's like, add a zero. You know, you want to affect 10,000 people, now add a zero, 100,000 people. What does that look like? Now you're changing the game. Now you're creating impact. You want to make a $1 million? No. $10 million, you know, like it's like, and he's, I heard that and I was like, whoa, you know, that really, I mean, it forces you to have these paradigm shifts as opposed to, like you said, like, you know, before it's like, oh, marginal gains. Oh, how can I get just one, you know, one little bit forward? And granted, I think that's how we have to do it day in and day out, but that doesn't have to be the larger vision. That doesn't have to be what we're shooting towards.
Right. And only thinking in terms of marginal gain, it constrains our thinking to in the box thinking, right? As soon as someone goes from, you know, wanting to make a million to 10 million, then they really have to think outside of the box.
Absolutely.
They have to get creative and get innovative in their thinking.
Yep.
What are some of the biggest myths about leadership that you're dealing with right now?
That dealing with people is as easy as, and then fill in the blank. I think and maybe it's partially egocentric, and part of it is, you know, we have this convenience mentality. I think that we can look at the, you know, insane complexity of the human and even more insane complexity of humanity and think that we can come up with the top 8 ways to deal with an employee or the top 8, you know, and it's like, no, it's a little bit more complex than that. And if we don't revere that complexity, even maybe to the point of fear it a little bit, but like good fear, like fear in that, you know, hey, I can't just plod along this without really paying attention, like you were saying, right? Intention and attention. I can just sort of set an attention and then go, all right, cool. But if this forces me to pay attention. This forces me to inspect what I expect. And so understanding that dealing with people is complex, it's seemingly chaotic, it's gonna be difficult, but it's also going to be worth it. Like you're not going to create something greater than yourself without having to deal with people, and probably lots of people.
No doubt, man.
Yeah, that would be one big one. The other is that, you know, oh, we could just, you know, we could just do this. Oh, it'll just, you know, oh, let's just, grow to this, you know, tomorrow. The whole thing for me, like, although, you know, I do that best possible future kind of vision casting into the future, which is incredible, I still take a slow and steady approach. And slow, maybe, you know, it's kind of subjective or whatever. So your slow is different than my slow in different areas of our life.
You calling me slow?
Yeah.
You're fucking slow, man.
Son, you don't even know what slow is. No. Yeah. So, but not, and so I would say like sustainable and steady, you know, whatever is sustainable for you, sustainable and steady wins the race every single time. It wins the race in finances. It wins the race in relationship. It wins. So although people are chaotic, and although we need to set, you know, add another zero to the end of the things that we're, you know, setting our intentions on, we need to really clarify that vision in the future and get as detailed as possible. Hey, it's still the only way it's going to happen when boots get on the ground, when we start walking it out with the means, right? It's going to be this slow and steady approach, and knowing that, hey, even if, you know, I got a little change from yesterday to today, or no change from yesterday to today, with my continued intention, with my continued action, you know, walking this thing out, in the end, it will be for that, you know, that great, incredible vision, that thing that's greater than yourself, or, you know, and you read the story. I tell the story all the time, whether it's in leadership consulting, speaking, or in coaching. And it's the tortoise and the hare, so much so that I actually, you know, when I get flown around to all these different cities and whatever to teach, I will try to find a used bookstore and try to find a different copy of the tortoise and the hare. And it doesn't matter how many copies or which different copy or how many times you read it or in what language, the hare never wins.
Right.
The tortoise wins every single time. And so I really believe that is true. And I think that we should be creating these visions that are greater than ourselves and doing things that are amazing. But don't get don't think that, oh, that's going to happen tomorrow, right? It's going to take tireless, you know,
right,
focus, right, attention, day in and day out. Slow and steady wins that race.
Oh man, such a great message, dude. And as you're talking, I started thinking, it's not like the goal is never to sprint towards a goal. The goal is just to be focused on the goal. And if you should choose another goal, then focus on that. But that's how real work gets done over time.
Yeah.
And the I don't know, funny, interesting, awesome thing about human beings is that it just has to feel like we're going at the pace of a tortoise. As soon as we feel like we're going too fast, then we burn out. But what's cool about us is if we want to have like 50 different like high performance habits of being a professional athlete or a great entrepreneur or whatever, just pick one at a time.
Yeah.
Turn it into a habit, make it automatic, and then you don't even have to think about it. Then you add another one and another one and another one. And before you know it, like you're just operating on a completely different level, but it feels easy. That's the great thing. And the problem I see most people making, because I've made it so many times, is I get motivated to do something and I want to do 10 different things at once. And it works for 2 weeks and then I burn out and then I lose focus of the goal or I give up on the goal. So it's pick one thing, master it, then keep going.
Absolutely. We tend to overestimate what we can get done in a day, in a week, in a month, and we underestimate what we can get done in a decade, right? Far underestimate that. And it's because, I'm frantically trying to do everything for everybody, for myself, so I can, you know, grow in all these aspects and areas of my life. And it's like, actually, it'd probably be a whole lot easier if you just built a habit. Now that's a habit. It's your behavior. It's just who you are. You don't know how to change that.
Right.
And then now you do another one. And then you do another. And then before you know it, in a year, you did way more than what you would have done if you would have kept trying to do 10 things, you know, at the same exact time. That person that's trying to do 10 things, you go fast forward a year, the person that focused on one thing at a time, has 12 new habits and then the person that's trying to do 10 things is still trying to do 10 things.
Yes.
You know, it's crazy.
Oh man. I heard you on the Shrug podcast say something like the goal is never the goal. And it made me think back to competing at the CrossFit Games. And the first year that we won, it was one of the most exciting moments of my life. It was incredible. And then I woke up the next day and I was still pretty excited. And then the next day it was kind of gone and I was ready to start training again. And then the next year we won again and we expected to win and we expected to dominate. And when we won, it was exciting. And then the next day I woke up and it was kind of gone. And it really taught me that the goal is never the goal. You know, I didn't have that language until I heard you say it, but the thing that we're striving for is not really what we're striving for. We just have to find something that we enjoy in life. Where did you learn this perspective?
Yeah, for me, there is a couple of bad moments, but then, some really good moments where, I expected that if this really big moment, this really good moment happens, then, you know, everything changes and I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be fulfilled. I'm going to be satisfied. And the problem was that, like, I never really felt fulfilled. Like, I felt good. Like what you said, I felt good. I was excited. Some of them, I was excited for a couple of days. Some of them, I was excited for a couple of weeks, but it this whole feeling of fulfillment or satisfaction, this deep penetrating, man, I'm there, you know, I made it. I didn't feel that. And I realized, and some of it was in daily meditation. Some of it was in prayer. Some of it was like looking to mentors and seeing like, oh, what's the difference there? Like, they seem like they're fulfilled. They seem like they're satisfied, but they're still working at stuff. Like, and it became like, an aha moment, this revelation. It's like, no, process orientation. You know, it's process orientation. Now, the cool part is, like, you can still have goals, objectives, things that you achieve in that, but now it's not about the goal and the objective. It's just about being in that process and enjoying. Like, I enjoy now the process. And the thing is, the more I enjoy the process, the faster my growth is, the more I'm developed. And the thing is, I'm enjoying, so I can have satisfaction whether I win or lose, whether I chalk up a W or even I lose. It's like, in the end, you know, I'll probably end up winning in the end because I'm so process oriented. And the funny part was when I most felt that it was actually in the suckiness of competing in kettlebell sport. And kettlebell sport, it's like you're lifting 270-pound kettlebells. You can't drop them. You're doing it for 10 minutes at a time. It's like watching paint dry, but then the experience that you have internally is more like you're just being beaten, you know, by bats for, you know, from about 2 minutes until the 10th minute. Mm-hmm. And the whole time from 2 minutes to 10 minutes, you just want to set these things down or get rid of the beatings, like not experience it. So it's kind of like this tumultuous, like horrible experience, but it's really spiritually refreshing, mentally refreshing in that it then became about when I became process oriented, that's when I, you know, was able to hang up all my accolades. That's when I became a champion. And to me, like, competing was just another day of training. Like, it wasn't like, it was cool. Like, it was, and don't get me wrong, it was like, it was different. But the way, you know, mentally I process it is like this, hey, it's just another 10 minute set.
Right.
Just another 10 minute set. I'm going to crank out right here. Just another, you know, day at the office kind of a thing. And I started enjoying the pain and the mental turmoil because I knew the change and the development and the growth that I was experiencing in that. And so then in competition, it was just, hey, I'm just going to add another layer of growth, another layer of development. And that's where I found my satisfaction. And so then, you know, medals just started getting thrown at me at that point, and I was able to compete on the national level and then the international level. And then I was able to hang it up and be okay with all of that. Like, it wasn't my ego, you know, it wasn't a like, oh, I have to be this champion in order to exist in front of people and around people. It's like, no, it became about the process.
Right. And about enjoying your time that you spent doing the thing. Right.
Yeah.
As many hours that you were competing and practicing, that's just time that you got to enjoy and feel accomplished in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. I've got two things that I'm, you know, that are huge visions for myself, one in public speaking and another in like personal development coaching. I feel like I'm such a novice at both of them, but I already feel like I've made it because I set the vision and I am working tirelessly at improving my skills in that, you know? And it's like, it's exactly what you're talking about. Vision, intention, means, just the fact that I have integrity with myself and I'm following through on my own intentions. It's the best feeling in the world. And I want everybody to take the advice that you're giving out to kind of set the vision for themselves and then hold themselves accountable for following through on that.
Yeah. Was there ever a moment of like a shift where like that became like, it was this time, like, or was it sort of learned over the long haul and steady for you?
Both. It was a stripping. Over the years, I've figured out so many things that I am not and so many things that I don't want to do by trying a million different things and, you know, striving towards a million different goals. And recently I had this experience in Ireland. It was like a personal development retreat, and the guy just gave us a ton of space to figure out, like, if we couldn't fail, what would we want to accomplish? And I've had this notion for years that I want to be a counselor or a therapist or a personal development coach of some sort. And I just thought that was out of the cards for me because I was an entrepreneur and I had this great opportunity and it would be a mistake to squander it. And I got really clear, like if none of this existed, if I was a blank canvas, like you said, what would I do? That's what I would do.
Yeah.
So I got clear on that. And then I just, rather than having to throw away business and entrepreneurship, I just integrated the two. And so now I do this for our staff, and yeah. I'm building the skills and I'm working on it. And, it's like a transcendence. Like I've learned how to include, both parts of my life, and it's just been amazing, man.
Yeah. Our thought. So I'm going to be on this team of guys where, we're creating basically post-traumatic growth. And sort of the same, you know, process where obviously you were given space. We understand that in the special operations community, they're able to get these guys, which are already, you know, like alphas, they're already excelling, they're already leaders, they're already leaders in their own right and doing really well at life. So they, you know, like that, what you're saying, that stripping, that process, you know, where it's kind of a steady, but then they get submerged into this like massively traumatic training. And the thing is, it's still training. So you're still dosing, but you're dosing at a really high level and you're dosing at a really high level.
What do you mean by
knowing
that? What do you mean What's by up? Dosing?
When we train, or even whether from a physiological or a psychological aspect, we can only handle so much, right? We get pushed off of allostasis or homeostasis, right? And then you come back stronger, or you come back with more soft tissue resilience, or you come back with bigger range of motion, or, you know, whatever the goal is. And those are all physiological things, but we can do it psychologically as well, which is kind of what we're talking about. We do day in and day out positive neuroplasticity training, or day in and day out, I'm gonna just focus on the process and just walk these steps. But then I think, and my reason for asking you that question is I think there can be moments of time where we are able to handle because of, high levels of emotion that are attached to it. And the visceral experience of it from a physical experience standpoint to a psychological experience standpoint, where we can really ramp up the dose, right, to get a growth that's sort of like a paradigm shift,
yeah,
and in our psychology, and that's the whole point of this special forces experience or the process. It's like taking guys that are already on the level that, you know, they've been sort of walking this thing out, or they feel like this need to, like you said, I really would like to do this. If I made it a blank canvas, like this is what I would do. But I just don't think that that's in the cards for me or whatever, even though obviously you've dealt yourself a great hand of cards. You are prolific kind of in your own right, in your own stuff, but like, you're like, yeah, but I want to be here. I don't want to just be doing this, which is still great. And I still enjoy it. And so giving guys the opportunity, giving, leaders the opportunity to experience post-traumatic growth, much like the level of post-traumatic growth that's experienced with the special forces community. But the cool part is it's open to civilians, right? So now it's like, hey, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a businessman, if you're a coach, if you're a speaker, if you're, you know, whatever it is, and you want to see if you can handle this greater dose so that you can have a greater response, like here's an opportunity, you know, here's the chance to do that.
Right. Yeah. It's an opportunity, like an experience like that, or even sometimes like a psychedelic experience or whatever. It's like, yeah, just pulling the lid off in your brain or in your soul and just, yeah, get it, like really putting the magnifying glass on all of those things that you can possibly work on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's necessary. Like I'll put myself, and I've actually got to create some accountability around this, because I haven't gone on retreat as much as I have been telling myself and believing that I should. Like, I believe that this is very important to take moments, you know, whether it's in solitude or in groups, you know, because other humans are going to amplify experience, but also being alone might amplify the experience, right? Right. You go out, you know, and hang off a cliff by yourself. Like, that's some sketchy ass shit, you know, but there's going to be some changes that are going to have to happen psychologically in order for us to handle that. So, not that I recommend that to anybody, but I'll, you know, sometimes I just, hey, I'm going to go out in the wilderness. I'm going to tell my wife, you know, where I should be when I'm done, but I'm not going to give her, you know, exact coordinates or anything like that. Because I need to experience the wilderness and what the wilderness is going to do to, you know, my, like you said, my soul, or like popping up, open the brain and taking a deep look and like, man, is this really what, you know, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this, am I walking this thing out correctly? Are there some changes? Do I need to make this a paradigm shift? You know? And those are, yeah, like you said, that experience in Ireland, there's some great ways to do that for sure.
Hell yeah, man. Where can people find out more about that experience?
So if you go to the specialforcesexperience.com, it has it all laid out for you there. You can hop on the newsletter. It's not going to inundate your email box or inbox with a bunch of stuff. It's going to be a couple of periodic things you can apply. And that's that's the level to which we're going to take this, is like, you literally have to be selected to do it. And then essentially you're going to get coordinates, and there's going to be an 8-day experience that is going to put you to the test emotionally, you know, physically, spiritually, mentally. And our hope is, with the cadre of guys that we've put together, the cadre of people that we've put together, I mean, to the point where there's even like psychologists and psychiatrists that are going to be there, you're going to find out, even if you don't make it, you're going to find out about yourself on a deep, deep level. You're going to pop open that brain and really take a look. So yeah, it's called The Process, and it's found at thespecialforcesexperience.com.
Dude, what a badass project you got going on there. It's a huge opportunity for anybody listening. If you have an inkling, check it out. Apply for the newsletter if you don't know if it's for you yet. And I think it's like we've been talking about this whole time, the opportunity to set a vision and to get really clear about how to reach it is one of the most special things you can give yourself. So, man, I got so much respect for you and what you're doing. Where else can they keep up with you?
Yeah, so they can check me out on the old gram at Aaron Guyett, AaronGuyett, and then Battle Rope Exercises as well. That's the kind of the fitness portion. And then Leaders of Leaders on the gram. Leaders of Leaders is the other channel for that. And then you could check out leadersofleaders.org. and battleropes.org, two websites that kind of have all of my stuff about what it is that I'm doing, what it is that I believe in, and how it is that I'm doing that stuff, and how you could be a part of it, or you can, you know, do your own thing and learn from it and start setting that vision, that higher vision, with that added zero on the end of it.
Hell yeah, dude. Thank you so much for your time, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate it.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.